The weather in Central Ohio just got better, and so should your loan rate. CME Federal Credit Union wants to try to beat your current loan rate by 2% on autos and toys. Plus, enjoy no payments for 90 days on car loans and no payments for 60 days on motorcycles, boats, and more. With car rates as low as 4.9% APR and toy rates starting at 6.5% APR, it's the perfect time to save. Apply today at cmefcu.org. Terms apply. Minimum floor rates 4.99% APR car, 6.5% APR other vehicles. Federally insured by NCUA.
Welcome to the Jazz Shapers podcast from Mishkon Dorea. What you're about to hear was originally broadcast on Jazz FM. However, the music has been cut due to rights issues.
This is Jazz Shapers with Elliot Moss on Jazz FM. In partnership with Mishkon Dorea. It's business, but it's personal. Listening colour.
Welcome to Jazz Shapers with me, Elliot Moss, bringing the shapers of the business world together with the musicians shaping jazz, soul and blues. My guest today is Sean Dixon, co-founder and managing director of Richard James, the Savile Row Tailors. And you should see him. He looks a proper sight here. While studying marketing and business at college, it was his Saturday job at fashion store Browns that Sean first met the menswear buyer Richard James. When Richard launched a menswear collection, Sean accepted his invitation to join forces and co-found their eponymous business, with the pair initially creating fashion shows in Paris and selling the clothes to retailers. But in 1992, hungry for their own store and needing to pay the bills, they saw an opportunity to marry aspects of the fashion world with the heritage and history of Savile Row and opened their first Richard James store in a tiny venue with a £10,000 overdraft. Their bold, colourful design may have upset the more staid retailers on the street, and they struggled with low sales and multiple burglaries, but Richard James found a loving, growing audience of influential creatives and professionals looking to stand out and have some fun. You are wearing, obviously, I mean, I'm assuming it's a Richard James suit.
Oh, yes, certainly.
Yeah, I mean, I think you probably, if you got caught ever not wearing Richard James, you'd be
in trouble.
You'd be in trouble with yourself, I imagine.
There'd be a few questions to be asked.
It's great to have you here.
And
as a person who likes to wear a nice suit, I must admit today I'm not wearing a nice suit. It's the truth. It's a T-shirt and jeans.
Dressed down.
It's a dress down for Jazz Shapers, but you are wearing a lovely suit and a lovely tie and a lovely shirt and all that. Tell me about your relationship with fashion. Before we get into where this went and Richard and Browns and all that, when did you realise that it wasn't just about wearing clothes, but you actually had a relationship?
That is a really good question, and one I've asked myself, because I am interested in clothes. I think you have to be interested in clothes to do what we do. You know, it's a business, but you have to enjoy what you do. Same with anything. Looking back on it, I realised I was quite interested in clothes from a fairly young age. When I was at school, I was quite interested in you know, I did a lot of sports. But actually, what really drove me on in sports was to get into the sports teams, because they had slightly better outfits. They had slightly nicer T-shirts.
Nice kit.
They had nice kits.
Yeah.
And actually, that drove me to get on the running team, the swimming team. And perhaps that's what kind of instigated my love of clothes and love of detail and colour. So, yeah, perhaps going back, I think, is probably 10, 11. I liked it, and it kind of carried on. And, you know, I didn't know what to do when I was, you know, school student. Got a job working in a store called Browns, which unfortunately doesn't really exist.
Doesn't exist, but I did meet years ago and went for a walk across Hampstead Heath with Joan and Sydney.
Sydney at the time. Wow, yeah.
So they were the founders of Browns.
Yeah.
I think Joan is still alive.
She is.
But Sydney has passed away.
Correct.
And they happen to be living in the same block of small flats in a beautiful part of Hampstead, that's probably 30 years ago. And she was a formidable woman then. You know, when you're in the presence of someone who's older than you, just go, you don't muck around with this person. Lovely. And Sydney, absolutely, from recollection, was convivial as well. But they were a powerhouse at that point. They were one of the original kind of high-end places on South Moulton Street and
absolutely
all of that.
Absolutely. A unique store. I mean, it became a bit of an empire.
And you went there in 84.
I went there in 84. I got this kind of work placements, and, you know, where everyone else was heading up to marketing and advertising agencies. I remember going into there and asking them if I, you know, saying I'd quite like to spend some time in the, you know, the press office or the buying office. And they said, yeah, you'll be working in the warehouse downstairs in the stock room.
But you had the connection. The connection began. The visceral.
Yeah, I liked it. You know, in the '80s, there was no, you know, I like clothes, so there was nowhere else to go. You know, there's pre, you know, Selfridges, Harrods. They didn't have that level of It was called designer clothes back then. That was the term that was used. You know, you don't hear that term anymore. It's kind of luxury or whatever. But it was designer clothes because they were created by designers, you know, and that kind of cult of the designer kind of, you know, started back then. And I remember working there and you'd see every single film star, pop star would be going through those doors. And it was a really glamorous, interesting place to be with interesting people. Every kind of major person in fashion has worked there.
And of course, and we'll come on to this in a moment, all the people that have come through the doors of Richard James and indeed are dressed by Richard James over the years, whether it's members of the Oasis band, members of Pulp, Mark Ronson, David Beckham, or even Sir Elton John. We were talking about your initial relationship with clothes. I just want to mention your relationship with music as well, because I do think this is not coincidence. The scene that you were involved in, you worked at the Wag, you worked at the Fridge.
Yeah, I was put clubs on, did a bit of DJing.
All that stuff. I mean, again, the worlds of fashion and music are not unconnected. That they're kind of on, you know, there's an edge to it.
Yeah, especially then. I think they were very music, fashion, film, all very much connected. And, you know, going out to the nightlife in London, I found, I don't know what it's like now, I'm really old, but back then, it was really exciting and you know, it was a great place to be. And
I didn't jump in and go, he's not that old, did I? I should have done. Sorry. Elliot, I set that up for you.
I was hoping
it was a delay.
Yeah. Really? You can't be.
You look really young, though, Sean, for 104. No, we're very similar age. We'll leave it at that.
We'll go with that. Yes, I'm a bit older. But,
but you enjoyed being in that world.
I really enjoyed it. It was really fascinating. I had so much energy. I guess, you know, maybe everybody feels that at that age, you know, 18 to 22, 23, you know, you feel really excited about just being out there. You know, I lived in suburban South London and suddenly I was in the middle of the West End and doing things. And what's interesting, a lot of the people I met in that during that time, still friends, and, you know, they've gone on to do, you know, they run restaurants, they're serious editors, they've tied to hold down.
I don't think it's a coincidence, though, you say, Sean. I think there's an energy that comes from being it for those people that are interested in fashion and music, because essentially you're recreating the future every day.
I agree. Exactly.
And that's sort of what you're doing as well, which I also want to talk about the future of Richard James, but we've got to talk about the present. So you meet Richard. Is there chemistry when you meet him, or is it a slow burn?
He probably didn't really know who I was and didn't really care. But we met, and I guess, you know, Richard is, you know, he was a great guy. He's really interesting. He's really funny, and, you know, real personality. So we formed a bit of a connection. I did go on to do a couple of other things before we started the business, but we kind of stayed in touch, and I think we both had a love for classic menswear that could be pushed a little bit, could just be pushed on a little bit, try, you know, be a bit more experimental. And
why did you both want to be experimental? What was it that drove that?
That's a really good question. Probably just to make things more interesting, you know, just try things out a little bit. I think we realized that, you know, if we're going to make a business out of something, you can't do the same thing everyone else already does. It's got to be fairly unique. And what is that unique USP? You know, what is that? We didn't know what USP meant back then, but you know, what was it going to be? And ours was going to be, well, let's take classic tailoring, for instance, and let's maybe add a bit of colour, a bit of texture, just change things a little bit, put it together with a bright pink sweater or, you know, a lime green overcoat. Just try that out. And that's what we did. We did that for a while, and no one really took much notice of it. Then eventually they did.
And why did they suddenly? What happened?
It's a very good question. I don't really know. I think maybe things changed. When we first started the business in 92, we were in the kind of depths of a recession. Dress Down Friday. I don't know if you remember that.
Oh, I do.
Yeah. That just been introduced.
A disaster for most middle-aged
men. A sartorial disaster.
Men and probably women, but definitely the men. Yeah. I mean, it was horrendous.
Yeah, chinos and polo shirts.
Chinos that just with those pleats. Yeah. And you just go, you shouldn't be wearing that.
Yeah.
You're not so young person.
It was an all-round disaster. And so when we started the business, I mean, people were asking us, what are you guys doing? You're doing tailoring companies. No one's going to be wearing suits anymore. You know, it's the end of it. And we thought, God, maybe they've got a point, but let's give it a go anyway. And I think it resonated with a different sort of clientele. We always say our tailoring, our suits are worn by people that don't have to wear suits, you know. So you kind of have to give them a reason to wear suits. What is it, you know? And that was right at the beginning in 92, and I think that still is the case now, you know.
And people obviously thought, even at your 10th anniversary, I read in 2002, they were like, oh, they're still here. Just a couple of quotes. I think you put them in the windows at that point. We'll give them 6 months, they said. Very dubious. At least they're not Boots the chemist. They won't last 5 minutes. Don't know one end of a needle from another. And lots more things that people said. And they're still here. And Sean Dixon is my business shaper still. And we're going to be talking about what's just happened as well in the world of Richard James. That's all coming up in a couple of minutes. But right now, we're going to hear a taster from the Michigan Innovation Series, which can be found on all the major podcast platforms. Lydia Kellett invites business founders who share their industry insights and practical advice, ideal for those of you thinking about starting your very own thing. In this clip, focused on the fashion industry, we hear from Ashita Cabra-Davis, founder of peer-to-peer fashion rental app By Rotation.
The Michigan Innovation Series. Inspiration from founders of cutting-edge businesses. In association with Jazz Shapers, with Michigan Dorea.
So for somebody looking to enter into the industry, whether that's the tech and or fashion industry, what advice would you give to them?
I think this advice applies to both industries. It's really focus on the product and your customers will come. I think, you know, we've seen it happen a lot, even in the tech industry, that people are like, they're spending too much money and time on the wrong things. You know, they're focusing a lot on how things look on the outside rather than actually building in the inside. So it should be about the quality of your product, and then the customer love comes very organically.
The Michigan Innovation Series. In association with Jazz Shapers, with Michigan Dorea.
Jazz Shapers on Jazz FM. In partnership with Michigan Dorea. It's business, but it's personal.
You can enjoy all our former Business Shapers on the Jazz Shapers podcast. And you can hear this very program again if you pop Jazz Shapers into your podcast platform of choice. We're so good here, aren't we? Nice and open. My guest there is Sean Dixon, co-founder, managing director of Richard James, the Savile Row Tailors. I mentioned the 2002 moment, the window saying, I kind of think it was a bit of a two fingers up to everybody. They thought you wouldn't be there. It was a polite two fingers. It was a smiling two fingers.
Yeah,
but it was like, excuse me.
Savile Row kind of two fingers.
Yeah, Savile Row's a bit hoity-toity, right? I mean, it's got beautiful clothes on it. Sean's looking at me going, I couldn't possibly agree with that, but sort of might be. But here we are now. You've just reopened, redesigned. Tell me a little bit about the thinking behind what's going on right now in the Richard James business.
Yeah, so we've spent quite a lot of time and money, refurbished what was our bespoke store on the corner of Clifford Street and Savile Row. It's a lovely old Georgian townhouse. It is a house, as all Savile Row establishments are called houses. And we're opening it. It's beautiful. It's perfect. And it's kind of what we feel are the direction for tailoring. Tailoring, by definition, is a kind of personal experience. It's an experience. Everyone talks about retail needs to be an experience to stop people just shopping online. Tailoring, by definition, has to be. And then bespoke and made to measure, which we undertake, intrinsic part of our business, even more so. So, you know, we want to create a space, an unusual space, a light space, a luxurious space, where men can come and buy suits and tailoring. We have a lot of other things, where, you know, shirts, etc. But the idea is it feels a very luxurious space, and we're very committed to that. And we have to give people a reason to come into a store, to come into to shop, and also to spend time in it. You know, and I think that this store, we put a bar in there. We've made it very open on the first floor so that we can hold events, so people can come and we can have 30, 40 people, you know, whether it's someone who's a writer, a musician. A lot of our clients, you find out that their day job is a surgeon, but they also have a whiskey business on the side because
of
their passion.
Do.
Of course they do. Everyone does. And they'd love to use the space, and so would we. We'd love them to use it.
But you must love that, Sean, because again, it's sort of the fusion of, I think I read something you talked about, arts and commerce and that balance, but it's also just the fusion of culture.
Yeah, of course.
And
creating a community.
Yeah, and the community of Richard and Sean over the years, has that evolved as well?
It's probably grown and become extended. But I think intrinsically, it's probably the same as when we started. You know, like-minded. You know, when you start a business, you're supposed to have an idea of who your customer is. And we all thought they were kind of creative professionals, you know, architects, advertising business, that sort of thing. And I think that's probably still the case. You know, in actual fact, it's extended much beyond that. You know, the sort of customer we have now is could easily be work in finance, but has a certain attitude, you know, and a certain style. You know, when I was saying to you, when we started at the beginning and it was all about dress down Fridays, A lot of the guys, or younger guys, would come in. They didn't want to dress down on Friday. They wanted to dress up on Friday. And they wanted to have big pinstripe suits with purple lining. And they wanted to look really sharp. They wanted to feel and look good and be a master of the universe. And I think a Savile Row suit helps you with that. You know, it's part of the process. So.
And the team delivering that around you and your way of managing them, obviously, generations change.
Yes.
And we read about the millennials and we read about Zed and we read about all these things. I mean, it is really challenging. How do you, Sean, in your role running this business, ensure that those great people in there are indeed great and work together and understand the ethos of Richard James?
Yeah, that's very true. I mean, you're nothing without the people that work for you. You know, and I think we're really lucky. We have an incredible team. A lot of people have been with us over 20 years. I mean, that's unusual. At the same time, we have younger people coming through the business. And, you know, I guess we've just been lucky. They get what we do. They want to be part of it. And, you know, they buy into it. I think that's, as long as you can convey exactly what it is you want and what you do, I think that happens. And, you know, I think we've been very lucky. We don't have a strict kind of, this is what we want, how we want everyone to be. It's, you know, I think if you trust people and let them show initiative, they usually repay you correctly.
And would they, if I asked each one of them, would they be able to articulate the Richard James difference, the thing that we talked about just before?
I think they would.
And what would they say?
I think they'd say it's classic men's clothing, but with a point of difference, with a certain style, with a certain cut, and, you know, colour, texture, all those things would come in. Men's clothing, what we do, it's all about detail and understanding what that detail is and being able to convey that. You know, if you come in for a suit that's going to be made for you, you're part of the process as a client. You're in it as well.
I remember.
Exactly.
Not with you, but next time.
Okay, next time we'll be.
I'll book an appointment.
And I think if you make sure that person's included in that process, it's a really fascinating
but detail
aspect. Detail is so important.
Detail.
You know, it's all about buttons, lapel width. Do you want belt loops? Do you want angles of the pockets.
Very important.
How angled should they be? Yeah. You know, it's pleats, blah, blah, blah. It goes on and on and on. And it's all about detail. And if you start including someone in that process, gives them kind of license and it makes them kind of committed to it, you know. And then they end up coming back and getting a little bit more interested and let's try something else this time.
Fabulous. Yeah. The only thing that's constant, without using the cliche, is change. And you set that business up in 92. At that point, London and the UK and a lot of the world was in a massive recession. I remember this. My dad was in retail at the time, and unfortunately, that business didn't last. It was a sports shop in one of the suburbs of Northwest London. It didn't make the cut, as it were. And I remember the high street being decimated. Just thinking about that now and that decimation around Savile Row, because it was similar. I mean, the streets of London were not paved with gold. What's it like now?
God, it's very different, Elliot. I think it's completely. We were in a very privileged area. Mayfair doesn't get much more exclusive than that. But back then, it felt a little bit tired and probably maybe our personal situation felt a little bit desperate.
You know, 10,000 quid.
£10,000 doesn't go that far.
No.
Well, it went a bit further than it does now.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, you're kind of sitting in a store that's kind of fairly full of stock.
But is there something interesting though about the world's a bit grey, you know, when the weather's bad. The world's a bit grey, we're going to inject, and a bit barren, we're going to inject some fun and boldness into it. Was that a little bit, do you think, of what was going on back in 92?
I'd like to say yes.
Am I just post-rationalising it brilliantly?
Go with that.
Cultural commentator. He's a Peter York of his generation.
Yes, we wanted to make the world a better place. I think there was a bit of that. You know, we wanted to definitely uplift what was going on around us. And, you know, Savile Row at the time was still has a fantastic history, incredible legacy. It's a unique place. There's nowhere else like it in the world. Wherever I go for work, you know, you can still talk about Savile Row. Even the word for a suit in Japan is Savile Row. That is the definition of a two-piece suit. You know, so, you know, it has resonance wherever you go. But back then, it felt, I was intimidated on that. Yeah, we had a store on Savile Row, but I felt intimidated.
Oh,
yeah, absolutely. It kind of, I felt like I needed to be asked if I could go in or, you know.
Was it you didn't feel posh enough?
I definitely didn't feel posh enough. It felt like a place where, you know, old aristocrats would go and get their suits, you know, and they had their fathers and their grandfathers had done. And And actually, to an extent, it still is like that. That's great.
Well, I was going to say, so now the new entrants, the new Richard Jameses that are coming through, how do you meet and greet them?
Yeah, now it's, we're all about being as relaxed and open as possible. And I think that's an important thing. If you've never had a suit made, or you've never even bought a suit, you know, it can be quite a daunting prospect. So you've got to be as relaxed as possible, and you've got to make that person feel as welcome as possible. And that's absolutely part of the process.
And the other tailors in the in the area, though, when they come in, and do you ever look and think, oh, that's just like we were a few years ago?
No, I think everyone's changed a bit.
Okay.
I think things have moved on quite a bit. And you know, we're actually, they like us now in several ways. We're all friends, you know.
We're
the new establishment, yeah.
You've got to be careful, though.
We might become the old establishment if we carry on.
I was going to say, you don't want to drop the word new too fast, do you?
Exactly.
Stay with me.
Hang on to that.
Hang on to the new establishment for now. Stay with me for my final chat with Sean. And we've also got some music from Ezra Collective, who are amazing, aren't they? That's all come up in just a moment. Don't go anywhere.
Jazz Shapers on Jazz FM. In partnership with Mish Kondorea. It's business, but it's personal.
I read a story about Gianni Versace, I think, and Elton John, I think it was that. They came in and literally it was supermarket sweep. They went and bought everything. And I think there was a conversation, maybe it was Richard or maybe you and Richard went, I think we're onto something here. That sense of when it's popped, how do you get to that sense that you've got the next set of, you know, the next season's clothes? How do you ensure that you're going to get that buzz again?
God, I think that particular was a moment for the business. And, you know, I can't remember the exact date.
Quite early on, actually.
Yeah, quite early on. But it didn't feel like it. It felt like I'd been going for 20 years at that point. Yeah. But Elton John brought Gianni Versace in with their respective partners. And they were kind of 38, 40, 42, 44 chest, you know. And, yeah, they just bought everything in the store and left and called up from the car and apologised for the mess they'd made. And we really don't have to apologise. But, yeah, we didn't have much left. To go back to your question about how do you know, every season I start with the new collection coming in, because we create collections on a seasonal basis, spring, summer, autumn, winter. And at the beginning, I always have the fear nothing's going to sell.
Do you still have that fear?
Still have that fear. Yeah. Every time, you know, you kind of think, is it going to work this time?
Is it stressful or is it exciting?
Stressful.
Right.
Our overheads have become so much greater than they were back then.
The consequences of failure are getting higher.
Much higher. Yeah. You know, we have, you know, salaries to pay and people to
But you don't, that. You don't look stressed, Sean, unless you had black hair 2 weeks ago and now it's gone grey. But you know what I mean? You haven't got many lines and stuff like that. So is there something about it, as much as it's stressful, is it something you've either got used to or you kind of know is coming and you know how to deal with it?
I don't know if you ever really get. I guess I've been doing it for so long, so I have an understanding of what to expect. But no, I think, you know, it's probably like being an actor. An actor, you're only as good as your last film. We're only as good as our last collection. And you know, so there's always that fear that it's not going to work. But in terms of how to, we have a lot of other stresses and strains within the business that you just have to deal with and work through. It's not that complicated what we do, but also we need to make it elegant, desirable, and enjoyable, and those. I guess that's kind of where the effort goes into. Mm. You know,
and the pressures of sustainability, of sustainable. Yeah. You know, creating clothes that don't.
Yeah, that's that must be a thing.
It's becoming
bigger and bigger. I always say that, you know, a bespoke suit is probably about as sustainable.
Yeah, it's got very little wastage. I guess
there's no wastage. It's made for you. It's made using usually very high quality wools.
Which last.
Yeah. The kind of old cliche about a Savile Row suit can last you a lifetime. It's not a cliche. It's actually a fact. You know, unless you really change your shape and size, but things can be altered for you. And because there's so much quality goes into it, it will last.
So that's not a challenge that bothers you. What is the big thing that you think about that you go, this is existential to Sean and to Richard James? If there is anything, maybe there is.
It's difficult for me to answer that. It's probably, as I said, since we started the business, everyone said, what are you doing tailoring? No one's buying tailoring anymore. It's not going to happen. Actually, the opposite keeps happening. So I do take that on board and think, is anyone, during lockdown,
is anyone going to wear a suit again?
Is anyone going to wear a suit again?
In my head, I was kind of going, it's the casualization of stuff like trainers and a trackie.
Yes, yeah. During that time, I did have a few speak to, you know, members of the press about that, and I'd have to answer that question. I seem to be asked that question quite a lot, but I always felt there was going to be a reaction to the action. Mm. And actually, there has been. There is. You know, people are starting to wear shoes, real shoes, uncomfortable shoes again, and saying, but also it's part of our business to make whatever we do desirable. You know, that's what we do. That's what we have to do. We can't just sit back and say, okay, we're going to make suits and, you know, you've got to buy them. You've got to reach an audience and somehow make them want them. So if it means that the tailoring you produce is maybe more softer, more comfortable, more casual, more relaxed,
then so be it.
Then so be it. We do that. And but you can still absolutely, you know, a suit makes a man look better always. And I think you want to keep those elements with what you do. So, you want to look better and feel better. And I think a suit does that.
And those should be the last words, because that's brilliant. No one could have said that better. Thank you for your time today, Sean. Good luck with the new refurbished Wonderland that you've created. I hope it goes really well. I will come in. I will book an appointment.
Please do.
When there's enough money in the bank. It's not tomorrow, but at some point very shortly. And I do want to come in because I just love looking at beautiful things. And there are lots of beautiful things to look at in Richard James. Just before I let you go, what's your song choice and why have you chosen?
It's Love's Theme by Love Unlimited Orchestra. In my younger days, we refer to, you know, I used to run the clubs and do a bit of DJing. This was always the last song at the end of the, 2 a.m. or 2:30 a.m. Lights were going up. You'd see the detritus of what was before you. And this always felt like a great song to end on. Slightly upbeat, but not too upbeat. And, that's why I like it. Plus, also, what's not to like about Love's Theme.
I feel like we're just wrapping up the Jazz Shapers 2:30 a.m. do. That was with Love Unlimited Orchestra, Love's Theme, the song choice of my business shaper today, Sean Dixon. He talked about wanting with Richard to make the fashion world more interesting, make their brand more interesting. He reminded us that tailoring is a personal experience, and that's a really important thing to say in the context of anything that a business provides. It's all about the detail, and understanding the detail, he said, is at the heart of the Richard James brand, but again, true for any business that wants to do well. And finally, that critical point about a world of fashion where things are mercurial, where things are constantly changing, we're only as good as our last collection. Great stuff. That's it from me and Jazz Shapers. Have a lovely weekend.
Jazz Shapers on Jazz FM. In partnership with Mishkonda Raya. It's business, but it's personal.
We hope you enjoyed that edition of Jazz Shapers. You'll find hundreds more guests available for you to listen to in our archive. To find out more, just search Jazz Shapers in iTunes or your favourite podcast platform, or head over to mishkon.com/Jazz Shapers.